Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy. So glad you are tuning in to today's episode all about screen time. Before we get to it, I am so excited to share that my book, Mom Needs a Moment, hits shelves June 16th. If you pre-order Mom Needs a Moment before June 16th, you also get access to my Parenting Pause audio library. These are short 4 to 7, 8 minute audios that you can listen to in the moments you really need them as a parent. I'm talking, you just got triggered by your kid, you just lost it, you just doom scrolled, like having a therapist in your ear. You'll also be invited to our book club live virtual chat with my good friend Kristen from Big Little Feelings. That'll happen at the end of June. And if you are tuning into this episode after June 16th, girl, no worries. I got you. Mom Needs a Moment is a book that compiles everything that all the work that I've done clinically, my own personal experiences. It's like a decade's worth of brain dumping turned into this book. I don't have courses. This isn't anywhere else. This is the process that I walk my clients through in identifying their triggers, breaking cycles, and ultimately getting to a place of feeling in parenting, less reactive, calmer, more connected, more present, and breaking cycles to leave a legacy for their children. You can get Mom Needs a Moment wherever books are sold, or head to the show notes if you order it before June 16th to get those pre-order gifts to you, those Parenting Pause audios, as well as invitation to the live book chat with myself and Kristen. Okay, let's get back into the episode all about screen time. I am so thrilled to be in conversation with my good friend Destiny Ann for this episode. She's a fellow mom, a parenting educator. She has her master's in social emotional learning and is the author of the book Very Intentional Parenting. You've probably come across her content on social media channels because it's that good and it's that relatable and that like practical. And I'm so thrilled to have her on to talk about screen time specifically. She has a resource. It's a screen time flowchart that I downloaded and laminated, and it was a game changer in her home. So I DM'd her and I was like, girlfriend, we need to talk about this thing, the sorcery of this tool that you built. But also, I know that it's not magic. I know it's not sorcery. There's a lot of reasons why we would have a tool like this that could work, and a lot of things we can be doing with our children outside of a tool like this to build connection with them and boundaries when it comes to screen time. I can't wait for you to get to know her more. Let's dive in. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hi, Destiny. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a long time coming. We have been chatting in the DMs. We connected a while back, and I was trying to remember. Yes, like years.
Wasn't Dr. Becky's like mastermind group?
Yes, we were in like a little study group together. We like met like every other week, and it was you, me, Dr. Becky. There were a few other good folks in there. Good times. Yeah. Good times.
Good times.
Dr. Becky. Yeah, that's right. And here we are. And then so we moved out of that study group into just connecting through our DMs on social media. And then you shared a resource recently that really changed things up in my home as it relates to screen time. And that is when I was like, I've always wanted to have you on the podcast, but girl, now I need to make, like, please, we have to make this happen. If it's like months from now, I don't care. Let's do this, because I need to learn more about the sorcery that you have. And it's not sorcery, right? It's really not sorcery, but it's,
it feels like it now. It feels like it now. At this point in my journey, when we first started using that resource, no, it did not feel like sorcery. It felt like actual hard work. But now that everybody's accustomed, it does feel like I know what to expect. Like I know exactly what's on the other side of boundaries now. So yeah, it is, but it takes some time.
Exactly what you said, though, actually, right? Like the work you put in and then the payoff down the line, right? But we're playing the long game a lot of times. So we're here to talk about screen time. Destiny is the one that I want to talk to about screen time. This has been a conversation that I know so many parents, so many listeners have been begging for, and we are about to head into summer, but obviously this is a thing that is a year-round thing for our generation of parents. And so before we dive deeper in, Destiny, please give the listener a sense of who you are and what you do and what lights you up.
Yeah. So I am just a mom in a really big community of moms. And I just share the systems and the tools that work for me and have worked for me for a really long time. I just graduated my master's in SEL. And so recently my focus has shifted to social emotional learning, which is kind of what I've always been doing. But just to have more clear language for it, to talk about discipline, to talk about communication, to talk about connection, and to talk about just the ways that we are making sure that we're raising happy, confident, collaborative, positive children. That's my jam. That's what I do. And really, this screen time resource, the screen time flowchart, came from the struggles that I had, the same struggles that everybody else does when it comes to the quality and quantity of screen time. And I believe so much in problem solving. Everything in my house is like, all right, we can figure this out together. And so I took a very intentional approach with screen time because of the problems, you know, that we'll get into, the things that I was seeing that a lot of you are probably also seeing, because it was taking a turn with my oldest. In the preteen years, man, we started going to public school and screen times became something completely different. So I had to get ahead of it. And I'm just really grateful and thankful that we have, with a lot of trial and error, I've done all the things. Gentle Parent Destiny has taken the phone. Like I've shut the Wi-Fi off. I'm done with the thing.
You and me both.
But I also know but I also know the other side of like, okay, how can we do this intentionally in a way that still reserves and preserves our relationship and the integrity of my values and how I want to parent.
Okay. All the things. Check, check, check. And especially a big check on the, you know, gentle, quote unquote, gentle. I don't know the word gentle. I'm like, I don't know if I call myself a gentle parent, but like an intentional parent, right? But I have come in hot on screen time stuff and had really big reactions to it. Almost, yesterday, I caught myself, right? I've done a lot of work outside the moment that like in the moment I was able to catch myself and soften a bit and pause, right? Just gave myself a moment to figure out how do I want to navigate this new thing. So there's a lot of things, Destiny. There's a lot of things. So my kids are right now 14, 11, and 5. She went through a little phase where she was really into the iPad. We were in a season where I was just needing space. And I gave her the iPad. It worked as it does. And she was always asking for it. Like out in, we'd be at a family gathering. Where's my iPad? Friends are coming over. Can we go on the iPad? And that was easy. That was an easier transition because really what it took was me working on my own capacity to have space to play with her. That kind of helped bridge us into, okay, now you're not interested in that. You want to play with me. Now we have to bridge into independent play because I can't always be playing with you. And that was its own thing. And right now, you know, she's in a season where she's not using her screen. Okay, that kid. All right, we figured that one out. The 14-year-old and the 11-year-old. Oh my gosh, it's a whole other thing because it's not just about games or like, you know, giving mom a break while you're on the screen or right, we're pulling it out for the airplane or for a big travel day. It's
this is their social lives. This is tied into their identities. Yep. This is a huge, huge thing. And it is a really big struggle. So for context, my oldest has a phone. We got her a phone, gosh, maybe a year and a half ago now, because she was going to South Africa on a big trip. And that was the way that we'd be able to contact her. They were like, the kids on this trip can bring their phones. And I was like, well, I guess we're leaning into this. But here's the thing is that the phone actually isn't the thing in our house. Like, it's hardly ever charged. You know, I give it to her when she goes out, and I'm contacting her boyfriend who always has his phone charged, right? Because her phone's not charged. But our kids, when they went into fifth grade, had to get computers. That was like part of the thing at their schools that everybody gets a Chromebook. My gosh. And it's just a glorified phone. Like, yeah, everything is on there. They're not on their – and so my son, who just entered fifth grade, got a laptop this year. And it's just, once again, we are in a whole other world, right, of the screen time stuff. And so, Destiny, talk about where do we start, right? I think that we start where we get stuck, right? And I think we start there, like what the pain points around it. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about your journey of like the pain, the struggle to the, you know, how do we find a way to connect around this and protect our kids and have boundaries?
Yeah, I think a lot of us started with the same goal and intention. And then a lot of us grew up with the transition of screens and them not looking the way they did. And so sometimes it is a bit of naivety, like, it's not that bad or whatever. It's just a YouTube video and we don't know all of the things that are coming out right years ago. A lot of us kind of just threw it at our kids. And so for a lot of us that have preteens and teens, it is like a dialing back and an undoing. And typically, to your point, sometimes it's not the quantity, it's not the amount of screen time. And for me, that was the case. It wasn't just the amount of screen time, because she was homeschooled and she did so many activities. She had so many other things that she was doing. It was the quality of the screen time that started to change. And for me specifically, I noticed it in things like confidence level, mood, irritation, like feeling anxious, being more self-conscious about things, not being able to shift and transition. And that was not previously a challenge that I had with my oldest. And so the youngest, like, she doesn't have a phone. She has her iPad. It's like super limited and she's always asking. And so now it's just like, no, not yet. I didn't have the not yet. But like, my mom bought my 13-year-old a phone. She was like six. Like, I didn't have the not yet.
You live and you learn. Not yet is a full sentence.
Period. I mean, she literally asked for a mini laptop yesterday. I was like, no, you have a Chromebook at school. Thank God they don't send them home yet. Ugh. But I think it's either a quality or a quantity thing. And starting that discussion from a place of like, I want to do this in a way that's going to still support and serve you to be able to do the things that you want to do. So what are you getting out of screens? Sometimes it is social. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it is identity exploration. Like, I don't want to take those things from you because I can't be your friend all day. Like, I can't answer every single question. I can't be the game all day. This is what you have access to. And so it's just kind of tailoring that access is really important. However, that's difficult to do without first a foundation of trust and connection, because then it just becomes policing it rather than teaching and empowering our children. That was very much the struggle before the screen time flowchart, which is why I created it, because I was like, all right, look, we need to do this together, okay? We need to figure out all of the things you love to do, because we had a lot in trial and error. And me being able to say, hey, you were on your phone all day, how'd you feel after? How'd you feel after you saw that video? Like, she had her own data and feedback that I could say, okay, I want you to be able to use it, but I don't want you to feel that way at the end of the day. Like, I don't want you to, do you notice on the days that you're on your phone, you and your sister fight more? That's not fun for anybody. Like, so that's kind of where we started, of understanding what's the impact and what is the goal. What is the goal of screen time? And then what's the impact, and how do we meet that goal while reducing the impact of it?
Yes. Okay. So I have my 14, 11-year-old are a little bit different in the sense that for my oldest, my 14-year-old, she doesn't spend a bunch of quantity of time on her devices. It's the quality of what she's seeing that she's coming across. So let's see. I was like, no YouTube, no social media, but Pinterest is fine. Like, my Pinterest, I see you already know where I'm going with this. You already know where I'm going with this. I was like, Pinterest, that's just like, you know, charcuterie boards and like interior design and crafting. No, that's my algorithm. Everybody that's posting on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube are just also posting their stuff on Pinterest. She's getting access to all sorts of things through Pinterest. A big piece of it, right, is like paying attention, right?
Yep.
Paying attention and being in connection to have conversations. And I will say, when I first noticed some of the things that she was coming across on her Pinterest, I came in hot the first time. There were a few other videos that were just, you know, when it comes to like body image sort of things, you know, and I came in hot the first time, you know,
yep.
And she remembers that we've talked about it because we've repaired it. And like there's moments now where I come in and we have like a kind of inside joke where I come in and I'm like, you're not in trouble. We're just going to chat. I'm coming in. We joke about me like being like, I'm not coming in hot. You're good. We're good. We're just like, I want to. And she's like, OK, she knows. But like we've kind of turned it into, you know, just a thing that we talk about because I did, and we've talked about it. But yeah, and then with my son, with him, he's like, when he comes across something that's violent or sexually charged, he immediately puts not interested, because there's like a part of him, I think, that is that those things make him nervous. And yeah. maybe he saw me coming hot, you know, he's like, you know, maybe that's it too. But it's the quantity. He could be... This is my kid who just loves a good dopamine hit, right? And like loves a situation that's not also going to create a lot of tension for him. And it's just, there's so much tension throughout the day. This is my kid that's got, he's very sensitive and, you know, sensory processing stuff. And he spends so much time working hard all day, gets home. And this is easy. Right? It doesn't ask a lot of him. And I get that. So with him, it's quantity. With her, it's quality. Just like it's a, and I'm sure with him, you know, he's eventually going to come across stuff too. So I guess my first sort of question is around this paying attention piece. You can't pay attention without also being in connection. But the paying attention piece, like how are we paying attention without fully micromanaging, or do you say this is an area where, yeah, we micromanage and that's okay? What are your thoughts on the paying attention piece?
That's the first step. Like, you don't know what's going on if you are not in connection with them. And the hard part for me, I think, initially was you have to be interested. Like, you cannot come across like you are managing or like you are trying to figure out. You have to be genuinely interested. And I think for a lot of us, there are so many entry points where our children are trying for us to be interested, and we're either too busy or we're just in our big adult worlds. And I'm like, that's lame, or like, you know, we just jump to the next thing. Right. But they are constantly like, hey, mom, watch this in their own little ways. And also, the other piece of it is when our children show us the impact of their screens in terms of how they speak, how they carry themselves, the things that they're interested in, are we immediately shutting that down, even if it makes us uncomfortable, right? Because you'll see like maybe like some sass or some rudeness or like a saying, and you're like, where is that coming from? But for your child, that is them shaping and figuring out their identity and trying something on. And I think we see our kids trying something on and we automatically go to like, oh my God, like she's gonna be pregnant in 2 years. Like we come so far. And so then we want to shut it down, but they're constantly showing us who they are. So in a practical sense, that could be if you're just starting out, like when they're scrolling with them, seeing what's on their actual feed, as opposed to, hey, I took your phone and I saw the kind of things that you're watching. Just like actually watching it with them, just to consume it, just to see, not to point out something in every video that you see, but just to see, hey, do all of your, like one thing that I noticed years ago when my daughter first started doing the whole scrolling thing, I was like, everybody on your like, you don't have any Black people here. What's like going on? Like, that's going to shape your identity in a certain way if everybody that you see is 10 years older than you or looks nothing like you or has different hair type than you. Like, we need to diversify that. And I didn't say anything in the moment, but I was like, okay, that's something that's important for me to check and note that I can then bring up in a safe way, and a are you open, and a you're not in trouble way, and really more so empower versus tell. So that's number one, is scroll with them, be in their world with them. And then the other part of that is pay attention to how they're developing and changing their personality and the things that they're saying, and finding safe opportunities to bring that up. It's never, oh my God, it is never in the moment. Like, if I, that is like my number one parenting tip. Never in the moment. Just let them be themselves in the moment. Let them get it completely out. Finish the scrolling session. Totally. Finish the vent session.
Totally.
Finish arguing with their friend.
Yes. And absolutely. Okay. So I've told you, I've got this book coming out here in a couple of weeks called Mom Needs a Moment. And a huge element of it is take a beat. And it's like, it's in the moment with your kid. Right. And then it's outside the moments. There's a lot of different ways in which we can be recalibrating and resourcing ourselves. We can come back into the moment and being present and showing up in the connected way that we're hoping for. But taking a beat, that has been it seems so simple, right? Like people are like, okay, give me the magic formula. And just thinking that it's going to be some really complex thing that all these experts are going to formulate for them, when it's actually take a pause. Don't do anything at first. Take a beat. Absolutely. Because the times when my kids and I have fallen out of connection is when I haven't. When I've responded and reacted right there, you see it in their faces, in their bodies, they shut down, they close up. And in that moment, I lose that opportunity of access to connecting into their world and like building that sense of trust that we can go into these hard things and these hard places with each other. And, you know, I can't take away the hard, but I can take away the sense of aloneness in the hard, right? And that, and gosh, down the line, when you are in another situation that, you know, is intense or, you know, makes you really uncomfortable, like maybe you'll come and talk to me about it.
Yes.
Because,
oh my goodness.
Because we got all this practice now, right? That you know that ultimately I'm on your team and I'm so deeply interested in like your world, and also that I have some access to remembering what it feels like. Maybe not in the same way, because I didn't have Instagram or YouTube when I was a kid, but I sure do remember what it feels like to have this whole world happening and all these interests and parts of my identity coming forward, and then feeling like those are things I have to hide from my parents, you know, and the loneliness that can come with that as you're navigating the difficulty of being a teen or young adult, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like none of these things, our personalities aren't shaped or formed in a moment. So you're not going to, if something really is that bad, you're not going to fix it in that moment. Yeah. And also the other side of that is that doesn't necessarily mean that that's who they're going to grow and develop to be. Like this moment's not an emergency. I don't care how explicit, wild, whatever it is that you stumble upon or that comes up.
And sometimes it is. Girl,
sometimes
it is.
It is. Sometimes it literally is.
It is the thing that you're like, what in the world? Hey there. If you are a California, Nevada, or New York based parent, we are accepting new clients. If you reach out to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com, you can learn more about my group private practice that supports millennial parents. If you're struggling with triggers as a parent, anxiety, relationships, boundaries, if you're trying to process a traumatic birth experience, or you're navigating fertility or pregnancy loss, we are here for you. If you are ready to take the next step in getting support with therapy, head to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com. Then click on the contact page and fill out that form. That is you sending an email directly to me.
I will follow up with you and I will make sure that you will get connected with the right therapist in our group. And that's me included. We work with both individuals and couples. So if you are ready to take that next step, head to that link in the show notes. I am so excited to connect with you.
And then ultimately, I can tell you the moments when I come across something and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then you go into connection with your kid and you're like, wait, hold on. You are still the like good, kind, yeah, like just kid that I know who came across something that, you know, you will of course come across because I've come across these things as I still do, right? As mm-hmm. an adult, like it's just wild, wild, wild out there, the things that are, right? And okay, this is like, we're living in this human experience now. We're like, this is the stuff that's out there. And this doesn't change anything actually in this moment, right? We have this opportunity to be in connection about it. And also have this chance to help build the internal dialogue and relationship mm-hmm. you have to these things that you will inevitably come across when you move out of my house. You know, yeah. When you're seeing a lot of different videos of women with bodies that don't look like yours, right? Or people who have different resources than you have, or whatever the case might be. That's the one, right? That's the one. Then when you see that and you have an experience with that in your body, in your own, how you talk to yourself about it, or when you know when to turn it off or when to like go touch grass, like that is something that you can carry on with you for the rest of your life, because mm-hmm. it's not going anywhere. It's just going to get even more complicated to know what's real, I think, you know. It's and what a opportunity, you know, to get to be a part of that.
Yeah, because we're balancing protection and education.
Mm.
And some of us did a really good proactive job at the protection piece mm-hmm. and just like, yeah, we're going to give you alternatives and we're not going to do that. And then there are so many things in our parenting journey where in hindsight, we are now educating our children and empowering mm-hmm. them. And when you're doing that from a place of this isn't an emergency and this is like, mm-hmm. I trust you. Like, I trust, number one, my capability to model throughout the day, throughout your life, what our values are. But then number two, like, I trust you to make a good decision. I'm going to give an example with my daughter that's more recent. The whole, like, cursing thing, like the language thing. Her friends cuss like sailors. A lot of her friends cuss like sailors. And when she was smaller, like, I wasn't against or for it because she was the firstborn. She was always around older adults. So just her situational awareness was very locked in. She knew where to, how to be in different rooms. My youngest, no, she came out swinging. And so I was like, hey, maybe we don't use certain words around her because she'll go to school and she'll be at the grocery store. So it kind of died down. Like, she wouldn't curse during a song or whatever. And so recently she asked me like a month ago, she was like, Mom, everybody my age cusses. Like, online, my friends be cussing, like, can mm-hmm. I cuss? And in my head, I'm like, girl, if you're the kind mm-hmm. of kid that's asking your mom if you can cuss, it's probably not for you. But I felt this like rising up in me because I'm like, oh my God, new friend group. And like, mm-hmm. oh, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. And are they smoking cigarettes? Like, I felt all of the anxiety.
We spiral.
It's just, uh-huh. it's going down the teenage dirtbag route, right? And so I was just like, well, let's talk about why. Maybe let's talk about mm-hmm. why you want to. And so we kind of left the conversation alone. And yesterday she brought the conversation up and we were just talking about it. And I was like, yeah, so why do you want to curse? And she was like, well, I don't want to. I just wanted to know if it was like still off the table. And I'm like, this thing that was like so heavy to me. She was just like, I'm just checking to see. Like, she goes like, if I like hit my toe or something and curse, I just want to know like if you were going to be mad. And she's like, but I like, we had the conversation, so I don't want to like put words in her mouth, but basically her point was like, I don't want that to be my image. She was like, so like, I, it's good that I can cuss and it's not a big deal, but I don't have to cuss. I don't need to cuss. And I was just like, that's great, because you came to that not based on me policing you, not based on me going off on you. You came to that based on the conversations that we've had about who you are and your character and what you desire out of life. And I remember the conversation with her and I was just like the friends that you have in your group that you're like, I aspire to be like them. Like, I look up to my older friends or whatever. I was like, do they curse? And she was like, no. And I was like, well, once you find people that you aspire to and they curse, then knock yourself out. But like, if you don't have that example yet, let's maybe not model ourselves out after our people in our friend group that are looking up to you. She was I feel that. And I was like, because there are examples. There are so many examples of people that your age that like maybe do curse, but you also find connection and values with, and you have an example of that. You don't have that example yet. So until you have that example, maybe just be how you are. And she internalized that, and the conversation came back to like, nah, actually, I was just asking just to see how you would react. I'm like, really? Are you kidding me?
I love her, by the way. So yes, my son, like I said, like he's and this will shift over time, right? But right now, when there's sexually charged stuff that he comes across or things that are violent, he hits not interested, and then he reports that back to me, like, Mom, I did.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, that's great, that's great, sweetie.
That's so sweet.
He loves to cuss, actually, and one thing that one thing that him and my husband do is, when they're in the car together, he'll be like, Dad, I need to get all the cuss words out. And he's like, okay, let's go. And they'll just go at it. Like, they're just cussing back and forth. And it's just, they're in the car, right? And so our thing with him is, they're literally just words. It's the meaning that we describe to them. Literally just words. It's the context that matters, right? The environment, sometimes it's not appropriate, right? Your little sister's around. She doesn't know when to not use that word or right. So don't say it in front of the 5-year-old, right? Which, you know, he's good at around like 95% of the time, let's be honest. She knows a few now. But also, are we using it to hurt people? You know? Are we using it to hurt people? Like, you stub your toe, like, is it, no, it's not gonna hurt anyone. And what I love about this conversation is, like, what is the context of this, right? Yeah. Is it my son and my husband have this relationship with each other? We're like, that's how they bond. Okay, you know, whatever. We'll let that one go. That works for them. Are we using this because everyone else is, and it feels like that's how I fit in and connect and bond in these ways? Does it fit me? Right?
Does it
roll off my tongue in a way that actually feels like, hey, this is kind of like an identity piece that I'm leaning into, you know, like someone who loves to throw those words around. And it doesn't have to be bad, you know?
It doesn't. There's so, like, I'm constantly saying a lot of things, most things are not a good or a bad. It's just, is this effective? And
yes.
And for her at this stage in her life, it probably wouldn't be effective, but it's also like, she knows that I cuss and my kids know that I cuss.
Yeah.
So I'm not against it. I'm constantly just like, what's the why? Why? And we have the kind of trust where she can be honest and be like, probably because everybody else is cussing. I'm like, well, is it worth it for that? Like, do you really want to do it? And she's like, nah, not really.
Yeah,
but if the answer was yes, then the answer would just be yes. And we would figure out, okay, how do you navigate wanting to fit in? And what does that mean to you?
Right. Okay. So I have this thing that I, you know, have been trying to figure out how I'm leaning into this as a parent to a tween and a teenager now. I feel like, and I'm so curious to get your take on this, a whole lot of parenting a teenager is making decisions that actually make me slightly uncomfortable, but it's like the right slightly uncomfortable. And it's like, I'm paying attention as I'm feeling slightly uncomfortable. And so, you know, like, it's a couple examples, right? My oldest is dating. And does that make me uncomfortable at first and at moments? Yeah. And are we in connection around it? Am I, you know, fortunately in this case, able to be connected to the parents, right? Like, am I, you know, did she called me after their first kiss, you know, we're talking. And there's been other stuff too, where we've had to have bigger conversations and I'm slightly uncomfortable and I'm in connection while being slightly uncomfortable. So, and like things, there are certain things that my son has asked to play, right? Because it's a big part of his social circle. There are some things that I've been slightly uncomfortable with that I've said, okay, let's give this a try, right? And let's like stay in conversation around it. There's been the conversations of e-bikes. And that right now for me, I'm a little above the slightly uncomfortable with. So we haven't leaned into that. And that feels okay, you know? And I think because for the kids, they've seen me do, like, say yes to things that they know make me a little uncomfortable, but we're talking about it, you know? And we're going to lean in and we're going to stay connected to each other through it. Then when I say something, no, you know, I'm just not comfortable with that right now. And they're like, you know, I was actually surprised. There was like not a lot of pushback. There was like, okay, yep, okay. You know,
there goes that sorcery, right? Because you've built the foundation of trust.
Okay.
The conversation or the question for me is like, is this against my values or is this just making me uncomfortable? Because if it's against my values and I say yes, now I'm giving you inconsistency and that's not a good thing, right?
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And so if it's a no and you understand, or if it's a no and it's not that deep, then it's just a no. Sometimes it's a, okay, well, we need an alternative. Example is she asked if somebody could like spend the night, and this is not a spend the night friend. I hate to say it, and I think that she's just not a spend the night friend. Is she a hey, let's go thrifting friend? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, let's hang out friend? Absolutely. She's not a bring around your little sister friend, and that is okay. And
okay.
She understood that, and she like respected it. But there were alternatives. It wasn't just a like, oh no, you can't be friends with her at all. But then, so you have things that are against your values, and then you have things that are like, this kind of makes me a little bit uncomfortable. I want to empower you. I want to educate you. I want to make sure that you are like, you know what you're doing in this situation, because I don't want to control you. I want to help you. I want to support you to be able to do something that you feel called, led, and you desire to do. And without shutting it down just because it's making me uncomfortable, because we're different people.
Exactly.
And they do stuff uncomfortable for us all damn day.
Like, oh my gosh, I am consistently uncomfortable, you know,
constantly getting on their nerves.
But it is a checking in of like, is this a me thing, you know, like, and a me thing in both ways, right? Is it just I'm feeling uncomfortable because it's more anxieties in the driver's seat, or is it me in the driver's seat with my values as the GPS kind of guiding this, right? Or is there I'm just worried about the perception of this, if they're going to go out wearing something. And actually, it's like actually something like, I would actually have loved to have worn that when I was 14, but there's a worry of perception or something, you know? So there's so many moments. And I think that the values piece is always coming back to, and tricky sometimes to figure out what is the value there. So I think that there's a reason to kind of explore what those values are. This is podcast number 100 something, and I've been doing this for, oh my gosh, so many years. One of the first podcasts, Destiny, is about how to define your values. And I bet that the quality isn't as great, and I probably say the word like and a million thousand times because I was nervous recording a podcast for the first time. But y'all should go back, because I think it's a good one. It's so foundational.
Often it literally is. And not just your aspirational values, what actually genuinely are you able to model consistently? Because that's what you need to base it off of.
Absolutely. Because that's what they're watching, not what we tell us, right? And another piece I think in all this that I love to talk to the kids about is whenever I can bring up my own story, right? I think screen time, I might not have had Instagram, right? Or YouTube growing up, but I did the things that they're seeing on there. I most likely could probably access some sort of personal story of a situation that I was in, right?
For
that
sure.
This is like representing or reflecting.
We had instant messenger.
Right, exactly. Oh my gosh. And, you know, so I can go back and ever find a personal story and find ways to insert those, they eat them up. Like they really love those stories, especially if it's something that you're doing that's, you know, parents didn't know, you kind of got in trouble, you're kind of pushing the envelope, you were, you know, or there's also some that are like incredibly vulnerable in situations where I felt really alone, or I wish I could have called my parents. And like letting them into my inner world as I'm asking to be connected and led into theirs, you know?
That's so important. And there's just so many ways that you can just give a nod to your experience. And they do definitely benefit from it and are able to see a different perspective. And I think it opens up the trust a little bit. I think it was last night we were having a conversation about sex, which is like not a weird thing in my house. We were just talking about it. And I was saying, you know, that like sometimes parents can police just reproduction in general and your cycles and stuff like that. And so I was like, yeah, that actually like happened to me. Adults in my life were like really trying to control, you know, my like paying attention to my cycle in ways to make sure that I didn't get pregnant. And she goes, well, that didn't work.
There you go.
We wouldn't be having this conversation if it did. You are not wrong. But yeah, I think that it's so important to have open dialogues, especially now that my daughter has gone to public school, because I'm like, oh God, if you think that your kid is not either talking about certain things or is not overhearing certain things, my goodness. I mean, the first day she came home from school and she was just like, Mom, all they talk about is sex. And this was sixth grade. She said, the boys are gross. That is all that they talk about.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
Yeah.
You don't even know anybody. You don't even have any friends. And, you know, and you're hearing this. So please, like, don't. I say this all the time. I just don't want my kid to be the one on the playground that don't know what the hell is going on.
Oh, my gosh. 1,000%. 1,000%. Like, my, you know, and my son and I, we, it's just such a core memory, you know, because again, with my oldest, she came across some stuff that led us into a lot of big conversations, right? With my son, I was like, we're going to get ahead of this. We're going to get in this early. And so him and I, we would go on bike rides. And it was, I was on this bike ride, dude, you can ask me any question. I'll answer them all. I'm going to tell you anything that you want to know. We'll go into all the details. And then anytime we'd be riding by someone, he'd be like, okay. And then we wouldn't talk because, you know, we're probably talking about porn or something. And he would be like, bike ride by the person. And then it was like, okay. And so, that thing about porn and like, you know, the first time I came across it, and, you know, we're just going.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that what I found is that kids, when there's an activity where it's not just all the focus is like this intense focus time, or when there's an end to, when there's like, you're like in the car, like there's a destination, you know that there's also going to be an end to it for them. That seems to help.
We used to have awkward Fridays, which sounds like
love that
similar. And we would have a conversation where we just share things. This was so long ago. I asked her about it recently. She was like, I don't even remember that. I think she was like 4 or 5. And I would let her like drop a F-bomb at the beginning so that she knew it was a safe space. I was like, I promise you can say anything. I'm not going to make a face. And we would just talk about things. We would talk about our anatomies. We would talk about friendships. We'd talk about all of the things. And to have that intentionally built in builds that comfort and gives you the reps of being able to hear some outlandish stuff. Because I promise, if you have a teenager and you're not hearing wild things, you're missing out on supporting your kid. No, you're not just missing out. Like, it's not fun. It is uncomfortable, but you're missing out on supporting your kid because they're hearing and exposed to so many things. And a part of it is protecting them. But again, a part of it is educating them. And the conversation and dialogue is like, I trust you. You're growing and developing into such an amazing human. And I just want to help you. Like, I want you to be the person in the room that that's not going to believe misinformation. That's not going to share harmful things. That's not going to be confused. Like, I want you to know what's up. And so are you open? That's what I say all the time. Like, hey, are you open? Yeah. And I've never gotten to know. I don't know. That is sorcery. That phrase. Are you open? I don't know because my kids are nosy or what.
Yeah.
But they've never said no.
Never said no. They're okay. Tell me what do you got? I love that. Are you open? Okay, and not yet, right? We're just like dropping in. Here's the scripts, guys. It's really not some formula. It's just these. It's taking a beat. It's just you're gonna live and you're gonna learn, and we're gonna try to find ways to stay connected and be a little uncomfortable.
It's harder? Do you think that it's harder when you first have kids versus being able to, now that you have older kids, you're like, this is how this turns out. So you can have a little bit more ease and it's not that deep.
1,000%. If I could bottle that, Destiny, like that perspective of
every first time mom.
My gosh, everyone. But there's so much more ease with my youngest. Like she's like an incredibly picky eater. And that stressed me out so much with my first, because so was she. And that now that girl's got such a palate. She loves all that. She wants to try all the things. She's so adventurous. And so there's just so much ease. Okay. We got to get back to this screen time flow chart, because you have this resource that really helped me with my middle child who, with him, it's especially about the quantity of time that he spends. Mm. When I printed it out and I had it laminated, it was the whole thing. That, first off, just like that, he was like, I think there was like this element of him. He's like, oh, you put effort into this.
You're like, serious.
You're serious. And this is kind of fun. I don't know. The way that it's designed is fun. I had him be involved in what are the different options. So yeah. give us a little bit of a talk through of this resource, and then I'm going to put the link in the show notes, because folks, I think this is it's so helpful to have something tangible that's outside of us that you also can have some independence with, right? And it's not me, it's the flowchart. Oh, hey buddy. It's literally like, oh hey bud, let's have you done the flowchart? Or like, oh yeah, remember the flowchart? Oh yeah.
So yeah, yeah,
talk to us
so
about this.
Both myself and my oldest have ADHD. And mm-hmm. so with that, our motivation ebbs and flows. And I would try to create these systems, and I'm like, okay, this is what, how much time they're going to have on screen time. And then you got to come to me and I'll open the screen time. But what I was finding was we didn't actually have something that we were anchored in. So it was like based on our mood, or based on if we were out of town, or based on if we were tired. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard to develop a habit and consistency around. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, I need something that kind of puts us both on autopilot, right? And so her phone would cut off after an hour. And if she wanted another hour of time, instead of coming to me and being like, hey, can I have screen time? And I'm like, well, she was on it all day yesterday. Or is her room clean? Like having to
manage
have a
shower,
it for her.
Like have you
yeah, exactly.
like been outside?
Things. Exactly. Instead of doing that, we created a flowchart where she can ask herself those mm-hmm. questions. And the magic mm-hmm. of creating it together was because then we could have those conversations about screen time. And it wasn't just mommy thinks this. It was just like, hey, I want you to have screen time, and I want you to do the other fun stuff that you enjoy doing that maybe isn't as appealing as screen time right away, but then halfway through making a bracelet, you're glad that you were making a bracelet. So let's mm-hmm. put that on the list. And so she would go through the list like, okay, am I feeling calm and regulated, or am I like bored? So I want to get on the screen. If so, mm-hmm. let's look at other things that I can do if mm-hmm. I'm bored. Have I actually taken care of a chore? Why? Because yeah, screens are fun until my room is a mess and I feel dysregulated and I can't find my favorite mm-hmm. thing, right? So let's make sure that's off the list. And just going through that flow chart. So then when she would come to me, it wasn't, hey, can I have more screen time? It was like, hey, you need to open my screen time because look at all this that I did. And she would come to me, I learned a new K-pop dance and I went outside and played with my volleyball. And like, it was, again, it was the quantity and the quality. And so there was more balance. So when I'm having these conversations with her about her confidence or about the things that she's consuming, there's a better foundation for those conversations because her mood was a lot more regulated and she was a lot more well-rounded. And so we don't use it as much anymore because she's consistently.
It's internalized.
Exactly. And I can, like, she has a to-do list for the day or whatever that she'll use, but there's not as much stress and drama around, hey, pick those clothes up off the floor, girl. Like, she can put the phone down and go pick up the things, or she'll pick them up without me saying something and noticing. And so we put those reps in of, you know, some people's house, it works where you do the things after screens. That doesn't even work for me. I have to take care of my need-tos before the screen. And so we just don't have access to those things until we've gone through the flowchart or we've gone through our to-do list. Mm-hmm. And that has been really helpful, not just for her to be consistent, but for me, because again, I have ADHD. And if I gotta be the warden, like I'm fun mom 70% of the time, and fun mom doesn't always get good results. So I need to be able to have that system in place as well.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. So to make it fun, we got my son a desk that he picked out, a gamer chair, whatever. It's not my aesthetic, but it's all good. It's out in the family room, and I will be okay with that for now because it gets him out of the room to also be on his computer, which just around the rest of us. And then his screen time flowchart is just like taped up on the wall right next to it. He put it there, you know, along with his Rubik's cubes and other little fidget things and a couple of books. And the first thing he went on the flowchart was to play with the cat. And I was like, you know what? It's great. You know, if that's what your body needs to like make that transition with a pet, an animal, some playtime, some cuddles. That's great. And then we've got the rest of the stuff. And anyway, I love it. It's great. I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes for the listeners to access. And Destiny, this was amazing, as I knew it would be. You're the best.
Thank you. I so
appreciate you taking the time and sharing all of your love of parenting that you've translated into support for us with all the listeners and with everyone that you touch. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was amazing. And I'm just grateful to share and to finally share space with you because we've been talking about it for a while. So thank you to you and to the people in your community that are listening.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.